Welcome to the Healing Ground Movement, a podcast dedicated to revolutionizing how we think about our bodies and our health. I'm your host, Dr. Carly Hudson, DC, and I have lived my life in pursuit of holistic healing and care that goes beyond symptom management. If you've been listening and like what you're hearing, head over to your favorite platform and leave us a review so we can reach more people with our important message. Enjoy today's episode.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Healing Ground Movement Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Carly Hudson, and we have another returning guest. Dr. Ashley Zimmerman is one of my absolute favorite people. She is a physical therapy doctor specializing in pelvic health. She is also a BirthFit leader, full spectrum doula, and nationally certified Pilates instructor. She cares for pre and postnatal women and women who experience pain and or decreased pleasure with intercourse and pelvic pain. And while all of this is what Ashley does in her professional scope, passionately, enthusiastically, we find ourselves having many conversations about the state of healthcare, women's health, accessibility, and all the things that we've unlearned in our pursuit of modernization and improvement. And perhaps we've come a little bit too far. And so that's actually what I've invited Ashley here to chat about with us today, is just the world of health at large. Welcome, Ashley. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
And Ashley is was one of our very first guests. I think you were second or third episode in the show notes. So if you got all excited that we had a pelvic health floor specialist, and we're not probably going to talk about that all that much. We did a deep dive back in the fall of 2019, which feels great.
I know. So cool to be back, though.
Well, thank you. And we go through Zoom, but it all worked out. So you and I got to talking over coffee one day that we did this episode with Ed Fraunheim, who just came out this last month. And it was about that confined masculinity and how so much of confined masculinity comes with, you know, the implications of women and what women are doing with confined masculinity. And it just opened up this whole conversation about how we all exist within this same structure and where we run from that. So I was wondering, what were some of your takeaways as you listened to that episode and where your mind brought you?
Yeah. So one of the biggest things was when you guys talked about how, like, as men change, women need to change along with it. And one of the biggest is because, and I literally just heard somebody say this to me the other day, like maybe 3-4 days ago, I'm not sure, but she was like, I want somebody to do all of like the hard work. I want somebody to be the man and to do all of that. And I was like, well, sure. There can be chores and things that you don't like to do. You know, like if I didn't have to pump gas for the rest of my life, that would be great, right? Like there's just certain things that we don't like to do. That doesn't mean that it's a man or a woman's role. It's just certain things that we don't like to do or we like to do, right? But because he couldn't like build something for her, that doesn't mean that he is not a man, right? Mm-hmm. And if you aren't willing to like be in a space where you can identify the things that you need, that both need, both parties need, whoever's in this relationship that we're speaking of, if you can't identify the internal needs, you're probably not going to go very far. Mm-hmm. And if you're only after someone who makes a lot of money, because that's what happens, right? Is women will say like, they don't make this, so I'm not going after it. It just continues to drive home this false sense of manhood and what that is and what it means to be human ultimately. And so, yes, if men are going to change, women need to change along with it. But it's interesting because one of the only reasons women are like this is because of the structures that man has put in place.
It really becomes this whole self-fulfilling prophecy. And I don't know if you can still use prophecy when it's something you don't want, but you're so right. And what it keeps you separate from, it's like you use the word, it keeps you separate from your humanity because the deep human need that we have is not to be responsible for everything. We want to exist within community. We want to be able to lean upon someone, But if we somehow have this cultural given that we need to lean upon men for doing the hard manual labor and women to do gentle humanitarian, it's not a full spectrum of people. And I think about, you know, my husband and I, we both have things that we don't want to do. If he never has to do another load of laundry in his life, he's thrilled. And if I never have to vacuum, I'm going to be ecstatic. So he does all the vacuuming, but we've separated that from a male-female gender role.
Right. And, you know, the other thing that we mentioned earlier too, is it still just blows my mind that we have to have research to support this. Mm-hmm. We have to have research to support, like, we have to be able to show that men who are, you know, find themselves stuck in this confined masculinity have poor health outcomes. Because when you peel everything away at our base as human beings, we were never intended to be masculine or feminine. You can't exist fully in the world if you're not balanced. And so it's so crazy to me that we have to have research to prove this, when it's like, well, this is how we were intended to be. And if you look at ancient cultures, if you were somebody who was a hunter, right, that was your job. Your society didn't exist without you, but that doesn't mean that made you masculine. That just made you a contributing human to your society. And without you and your job, your society wasn't going to do very well. Same thing as, like, you know, somebody who was the bread maker, you know, or whatever it was, that doesn't define masculine or feminine. That's just your job in, you know, life. But that doesn't make you human.
And then we've extrapolated this out onto such a strict binary that we start to really confine people into categories that may not truly suit them based on a construct that we've handed to them. And so while it's so upsetting to know that we need to have the research and have the proof why this matters, we know that the healthcare system is absolutely littered with stories and ignored research and presumptions about women and women's health, going right down to the definition of hysteria.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when you dive deep into how women's health came to be and gynecology came to be, it's a very dark, dark history. And if you ever want to, you know, further your knowledge in this subject, I mean, you can go down a rabbit hole. You could be on Google for hours.
Introductory lesson.
So introductory lesson, really simple, is gynecology came around by Mr. Sims, who is no longer considered a doctor because that title was stripped of him. So I'm not going to give him the pleasure of that title. He performed his experiments on Black women who were enslaved, and that's how we got to be where we are. Some women getting operated on 30 plus times. And here's the deal, they weren't given any pain medication because it was still of the belief that Black women didn't feel pain. Now, I have worked with a mental health specialist who is the only licensed postnatal specialized mental health specialist. I'm not exactly sure of her title. Anyways, the only one in North Carolina, but she lives here, right? So she does these virtual sessions. She's the only one down there. And she was having a retreat one day with medical professionals. And she asked them what their rounds were like on Black women after they had the baby, their breastfeeding rounds. And they were like, well, we don't do them. And she was like, what do you mean you don't do them? They weren't doing rounds on new Black mothers because it was still the common belief that Black women couldn't breastfeed, which goes way back to what was believed in the very beginning when all of this came around. And we have these structures in place built upon somebody else's pain that we're supposed to now, built by men, that we as women are supposed to now come in and fill in this healthcare system and feel safe in it. But there's no way to feel safe if this is what it was built upon, right? And so,
I just wonder when we go in for these appointments, for our gynecological appointments, is why does it have to be so cold? Why does it, sterile, we like sterile. I don't mean that in the way of no germs, but this unfeeling and aggressive maneuver to poke and prod to diagnose that is often incredibly uncomfortable and you know, new research has even shown that recurrent pap smears can generate more abnormal tissue because of the damage and inflammation that is happening just by the very procedure.
Totally.
Such that this was not an investigation that is based on a foundation of how are you, person who has a uterus and a vaginal canal, how are you doing and feeling and what are your needs met? It is very much an exploratory at the expense of an individual for the sake of male curiosity.
Yes. And you're not even greeted by the doctor when you go in there. You're greeted by the tech, who, not to say that they're mean people, but you're greeted by somebody else who's really asking you, like, what are your symptoms? What's your blood pressure? Like, let's do all of that. Okay, go ahead, undress. Here's your little paper covering, hop up on the table. Mm-hmm. And then the practitioners who's going to do the exam, they come in, they tell you to scoot to the end. Your legs are open. They're in these stirrups that is not comfortable for anyone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to go back to your cold statement, the rooms are often cold, like quite literally, cold. Like, and it's bright and the lights are shining in your face. And then they get this extra light that they like shine right down in there. And then they put this speculum in you that's freezing. And they haven't even asked if you have pain with intercourse. So that speculum can be causing somebody trauma because they have been sexually assaulted or just have a lot of pain with intercourse. But none of that is being found out because you're just a number laying on the table and they have to go through the process because these procedures were put in place. Yeah, I get it. They have to like find out certain things, but these procedures were put in place without any input from like, how does a woman feel safe? How mm-hmm. am I going to actually treat this person as the human that she is, who isn't, you know, I think it's the separation of mind, body, spirit that mm-hmm. oftentimes is my criticism of the Western medical field is we haven't, and again, it's mind boggling why this is not just something that is done 100% of the time, because we know as humans, like you cannot argue the fact that mind, body, and spirit are separate. We are one, we are whole. And until we look at the person as a whole in front of us, we're not giving the best care. Yeah. I don't care if you do a thorough physical examination. If that's all you're doing, you're not giving the best care. Well, and especially, go ahead.
Yeah. I was like, well, and if we're not looking at even for what we're trying to attain during a gynecological exam on the table, if it really is just to look for abnormal cells, and that's it, mm-hmm. we're only looking in that aspect for a life or death situation.
Right.
And that kind of puts the value on what is worth inquiring about a woman's reproductive system. Is mm-hmm. it going to kill you or not?
Mm-hmm.
Not does it serve you, does it support you? And right. I hate to say, even given all of my training in exercise physiology, in massage therapy, in doctor of chiropractic, which has more physiology and kinesiology than an MD's training, all of these things, I never understood and was never taught the functionality of a pelvic floor, the negative impact of tight, imbalanced muscles on a pelvic floor into a woman's sexuality or just general comfort mm-hmm. until I started speaking with you, a pelvic floor specialist. And that's well into my 30s and even after all of that additional training.
Yeah.
It's so not given.
You know, the interesting thing is too, in my traditional training, I didn't get it either. I mean, I got like the anatomical presentation of this is the pelvic floor. Can you mm-hmm. identify these specific muscles? What's their nerve innervation? Blah, blah, blah. Honestly, when the patient is laying on my table, I don't really care. I'm not thinking about the actual insertion of this muscle or like, I mean, it's helpful to know. And it's kind of like being processed as I'm examining things. And mm-hmm. I can kind of think of like, okay, this nerve is irritated. Like what nerve root do I need to look at? You know, those types of things. But usually the physical piece of it is 25% of what's going on. If that, like, the rest of it, and I didn't get that in my traditional training because, again, the Western medical system, we separate mind, body, spirit. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you start to talk about if you're in, and this is like from personal experience, as soon as you start to talk about your feelings and how like what was done or like what was prescribed at the last visit has been making you feel, I got mm-hmm. told that I needed to go like see a psychologist. I was crazy. I was labeled as crazy. And I was like, well, no, but I really think that like something is going on, but I didn't know what it was because I wasn't taught to listen to my body, right? I was taught to listen to whatever the doctor said about my body. That's where we like lose the trust, is we move away from ourself mm-hmm. when we are only listening to what the doctor says about our body instead of listening to the innate wisdom, innate intelligence, whatever you want to call it, that we have within ourselves. And as women, our womb, our uterus, that's where it's held. And so if you go through your entire life without knowing how to listen to what it's saying to you, mm-hmm. you go through this very cold and sterile world, losing your sense of self along the way, but not knowing how to get back to it. And maybe you don't even know that you've lost it, you know, because we're in this society that's like very masculine.
Mm-hmm. So you don't need it. There's not that value on the mm-hmm. functionality. You know, again, mm-hmm. it's going to kill you, is it not? And so right. we get into, you know, this little vignette you just shared about getting into the emotion and how my treatment and how my care made me feel. And suddenly now this belongs entirely in the realm of psychology or a psychologist. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really doing a huge disservice. And that reinforced over time puts women in a very difficult container of not only must you be the emotional counterpart to your masculine partner, because that's the dichotomy we started this conversation with, and that is, of course, the social construct that we largely live in. Yeah. You must be that emotional person, but because you're colored in that exclusively, and you don't have mm-hmm. both sides of your humanity, it's also an untrustworthy message. Yeah. So women across the board, particularly here in Western medicine, will be called, you know, again, we'll use the word hysterical or the difficult patient for coming mm-hmm. in and trying to express the amount of pain, fear, discomfort we might have with an unknown thing happening in our body. And this would be anywhere in the system. Mm-hmm. Or if we don't express it enough, because women are supposed to be emotional, it must not hurt that badly. Mm-hmm. And so we're in a damned if you do, damned if you don't sort of category mm-hmm. of seeking care, where you must perform the right level of discomfort without becoming a difficult, hysterical patient and without being so stoic no one believes you. And right. this is an impossible task.
Right. And, you know, when women started working out of the home more, mm-hmm. I think that just like compounded all of this. And you can look at, so the easiest example I have is a new mom, whether it's like first baby, fourth baby, whatever it is, because you see this, you know, you have this new baby and everybody is hyper-focused on the baby and you should be totally happy because you have this new baby, right? Well, okay, but what about the woman? Right. Because now we've taken them in and they're in this motherly role where the feminine tends to like show a bit more, but we've put them into this society where now we are supposed to be all of the things that you just said, but we're also working out of the home, or we have more responsibilities out of the home. And so now we get stuck going right back to that masculine side because the masculine is the doing, mm-hmm. right? And so we do, we go, and the feminine side gets neglected. So we get this buildup of energy through the masculine side of us, which, so if you're not familiar with working with energy, it's not created or destroyed. It's just, we can displace it differently and we can move it around and we can balance it, but you're not going to just all of a sudden create new energy. It's there. What you have is there. The goal is to be balanced in this harmonious state within ourselves. Mm-hmm. But you think of this, like supposedly supposed to be like nurturing tender time, but we get wrapped into too much masculine energy because of these social constructs that we talked about, because now we're not supposed to be, you know, it's too much for us to be, we're literally told that we can't have it all. Mm-hmm. You can't be a good mom and be a good career person. And, you know, whatever else you want to be in life, you have to pick. Right. And I've had older women tell me this multiple times. Mm-hmm. Well, you have a career, so you're not going to have a family. Like literally those words. And I'm like, well, who the heck are you? You know, like, I'm so sorry that that wasn't available for you, but I refuse to do that. Right. Does it take work on my part to find that balance? And will it? 100%. Right. But again, if we return to what as humans we were intended to be, if you are in a male body or a female body, you were intended to have a balance of masculine and feminine energy. Mm-hmm. It's not males have more masculine and females have more feminine. We are all intended to be balanced. And I, you know, I think, like, I just heard one of my really good friends the other day, he told me, well, I was raised where if I needed to cook and provide for my entire family, I could do that. So he knows how to cook an entire meal, right? Mm-hmm. And that was intended for the sole purpose of being able to take care of a family, when that's usually told to women,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
But why? Why is that only told to women, right? Like, providing for your family is more than just money.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's more than just, yeah.
And what are we putting a price on? What are we putting a value on? Okay. So if we go back to, you know, where new mothers are, you know, in this place of needing the rest and recovery of rejuvenation to acquaint themselves, I mean, quite honestly, with a body that is brand new, with a role mm-hmm. brand new, mm-hmm. whether it's your first or your fifth, it's the first time you are a mother of one or five. This is right. a brand new existence in life. And the real lesson and the real message is about getting back and getting back to it.
Mm-hmm.
And here again, we look at women and women's healthcare and what is being prioritized. We mm-hmm. go in, we get our 6-week postpartum check. We make sure any stitches that we may or may not have are healing well. There's no mm-hmm. secondary infection. All good. You're not going to die. Back into the world.
Right.
But what about another, right. you know, some European countries do a lot better with this PT.
Mm-hmm.
Here we have to take the personal responsibility of finding specialists like yourself to yeah. assess and address our functionality to whether or not we can get back into the world, care for our children without having any incontinence, without having pain with sex, without having a loss of core muscle control that provides mm-hmm. us with all kinds of chronic pain, back, hips, knees, shoulders, elbows, all of it.
Yeah.
Again, we're not prioritizing women's health. We're prioritizing right. not dying. Sort of.
Right. Yes. We are prioritizing, can you walk again? Can you physically get yourself to where you need to be, like, mobility wise? Mm-hmm. And part of the problem with the medical system being masculine mm-hmm. in its, like, general energy is childbirth becomes feared
mm-hmm.
instead of treating a woman's body and the transition that the mother goes through not just the pregnancy piece of it. Like, you know, you obviously you can see the transition in a pregnant woman, but the process of birth, like the labor process, that's a huge transition. And then your body continues to transition after that. Right. And we completely ignore that because all we hear about is the pain
mm-hmm.
and like, oh my gosh, I don't want this to happen during labor. And not about like, wow, I have this human being inside of me and this human being is real. And me and this human that is about to be birthed through my vaginal canal or through my belly, I can speak with this human and we can do this together. Mm-hmm. And this can be a transition that we carry. You know, it's like, I try to describe it as like, you know, you as the mom have this energy bubble, right? Your baby has an energy bubble because we're separate, right? We each have our own little energy bubble, but you, because you are mother and child, those energy bubbles can be connected. Nobody teaches us how to connect into those energetic bubbles. So it's very separate. And anytime we try to separate things out, we end up going more towards the masculine
mm-hmm.
because it becomes less of how, again, if you're talking about society, like how are we all connected and working and supporting, having our supporting roles in society, in your body, it's that mind, body, spirit, right? If we try to separate, we're automatically going to get stuck in that masculinity instead of the balance between masculine and feminine.
Because it's now feminine job to be the connector, to be yes. that supporter.
Yes.
And if we can't do that,
yes,
we don't have it. Well, and right. even more so, I mean, I want you to speak even a little bit more to this transformative process of giving birth and the fear that goes into it. Because again, this is just yet another example where the fear comes from all mm-hmm. of the emergency worst case scenarios.
Yeah. Yeah.
Comes from, I don't want you or your baby to die. And it might happen.
Right.
It might. Right. But
it might.
It yeah. probably won't.
Right.
So
Yeah. So, I mean, depending on what race you are, if you're a white woman, your chances of survival and your baby's survival are pretty good. If you are a Black woman, you know, there are some other things that like need to be taken into consideration. And again, that goes back to the history. Like all of this is tied into the history of gynecology, and how we are in this position is because we took the natural state out of it. Mm-hmm. Right. So when you take something like pregnancy and birth and you medicalize it, which is what we've done, because when you look back, women didn't have the pelvic floor dysfunction after giving birth to a child in ancient cultures. And not even, I mean, I'm saying ancient, it's not even like that long ago. You know what I mean?
It's just like industrialized culture.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And so, you know, and like a side note to that, modern toilets and chairs is what really ruined us, because we lost the need to squat. It's the deep squat. Mm-hmm. So if you look at a toddler, and how they can just deep squat and stand up and down, that's pelvic floor development. So mm-hmm. as soon as that child goes into school, they lose as the squatting that they've done their whole toddler life, right? Like, yes, I'm sure they still do some of it. Children are better than adults at squatting, but they lose that. So now we have this child, this female that's going to give birth, who has gone through puberty on a pelvic floor that wasn't fully developed to begin with, but we haven't taught her that. And we haven't taught her how to connect with this area of our body. And now we go to give birth, and all she hears about is how painful it's going to be, how she could die, how the baby could die. All of these things could go wrong. And then you're in labor, and there's a part in labor. The most recent birth that I was at was in September. And there's a part in labor where there's usually kind of a freak out moment, right? And you can see it in the mom's eyes, and she like pulls back. So what happens when the mom pulls back is the baby pulls back. The babies, they are one. They are like with us. We are connected. And again, there's that energetic bubble, right? Like, yes, we each have our own separate little bubbles, but as mother and child, those bubbles are together.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as baby feels you retract, baby's going with what you're doing. So baby's going to retract. And now all of a sudden we think that there's this stall in labor. And so if you're in a medical situation, they're going to freak out, right? Because there's a stall in labor and she's not progressing. And now, you know, what's happening? If nothing is going on with the baby, as far as like vitals, right? Or nothing is going on with mom as far as vitals, or maybe she just needs to take a deep breath. I don't know, you know, the people who work in healthcare and you sit a patient up at the side of the bed, there's always that moment, or usually there's that moment where like they've got to let their breath regulate and their blood pressure and all of that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So if you can't get it regulated, then yes, obviously something needs to be done about it, right? But what if instead in that moment, we looked at the mom and we encouraged her, right? There is a reason why women didn't give birth alone. This whole, like, you go to the hospital and you only give birth with like your doctors and nurses in the room, and maybe you have your partner there, or maybe you have a sister or a mom. That never used to be. There's a reason why you're surrounded with women who care for you. There's a reason why they have like this tribe of women around them, right? Mm-hmm. It takes a village, right? It's not just a village for the baby, it's a village for mom. And we've stripped them away from it, and we're left with this singular cold environment with people who we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are we going to feel safe? So yeah, so going back to that, instead of putting more fear in them, like why are things stalling? Because then mom's gonna be like, oh, I'm doing something wrong. I've seen it. The mom's like, I'm doing something wrong. What am I doing wrong? Am I not? I don't know. Like, no, you just need to take a few deep breaths. Like, pause, rest. Let's connect back in. You know.
And to that point, that's the mind, body, spirit. We're taking a pause in physiology and saying physiology shouldn't pause. And you know what? Arguably, maybe it shouldn't. But your emotional needs, your emotional ability to get right with what's going on, pushing a human out of you is no mm-hmm. small feat, and it will change your future forever. That deserves a deep meditative breath every now mm-hmm. and again.
Yeah.
Can we address it as emotional and let that be an intervention rather mm-hmm. than adding pharmaceuticals?
Yes, exactly. And can we instruct women prior to giving birth mm-hmm. what it means to surrender, right? Mm-hmm. Because what comes with the separation of mind, body, spirit, and the separation of anything is, again, so if you're separating mind, body, spirit, we're naturally going to trend towards the masculine, because there's just like doing. You got to just keep doing and doing and doing and doing and doing. You pull away from having to actually feel anything, mm-hmm. right? So we don't know, and especially as females, we don't know how to retract back and connect. We weren't taught, right? Like if you think about the first time you had a period, it was more of just like, well, for most of us, right? It's more of just like, oh my gosh, how do I make sure that I don't bleed through my pants at school? You know, yep. like it's very, it's not like, what is this energy movement through my body? And what is the significance? Yeah. Yes. And what's the significance of this blood shedding and leaving my body? What does that mean? And how can I connect to that? Right. So from the get-go, we're not taught how to surrender to the processes that our female body knows how to do. The female body was meant to give birth, right? Like that's part of its innate wisdom. We've just never been taught how to connect into it. So mm-hmm. we get stuck, right? We separate everything out. And there's no way, you can't teach your body how to fully connect and surrender when you're in the middle of labor, right? You can do what you can, but probably not the time. And it's like, that's not the time to teach the pelvic floor how to lengthen, right? Mm-hmm. You're kind of too late. If you're at that point, like you kind of just got to do what you got to do to get through it. Why are we not doing this? Yeah. Like, why are we not doing this prior to? Like, mm-hmm. this is something that we have taken because of the society that we have grown up in, because we've moved so far away from like our intended human existence, right? Into this like very modern, I don't even know what you call it, progressed world. Like, we've moved away from that innate piece of what it means to be human. You know, if we went back to that, we wouldn't have to worry so much about it. Like, it just would be innate. We would know how to listen.
And that's the thing. And it's what is the cost of this progression? What are the costs mm-hmm. of all these conveniences? When mm-hmm. we talk about things like, we now have the privacy of solo birth in these sterile hospital rooms, but what we've lost is this communal learning. Small mm-hmm. children are not going to witness their mother or mm-hmm. aunt or sister or cousin or whatever give birth, even when this is something that may or may not be coming to them in their future.
Right.
We've lost that learning. What right. have the conveniences of, like you said, the chairs and the toilets done for our pelvic floor and further right. degradation there? And you mm-hmm. can go back through our catalog of podcasts, and anything from dental health to mental and emotional psychology seems to come from, what is the cost of convenience mm-hmm. to ourselves as humans, which mm-hmm. survived so well in its natural habitat for so yeah. long.
Right. Exactly. And what's that?
We could use more hygiene. We'll take yeah. that.
Yeah. And you know, this is not to say that we just don't need Western medicine, mm-hmm. right? Western medicine saves lives. And and that's what it should be intended to do, right? Mm-hmm. But we can't, if you're not, and I like, this is, it bothers me to hear providers talk about how they schedule longer so that they can listen to their clients. So maybe you get, you know, where maybe you're getting 5 minutes and now you get 10. So sure, you can tell them more about what's going on, but their fix is still only physiological medicine, whatever it is, right? It mm-hmm. still isn't, that's not, it's just not good care. And part of it, I mean, like, our medical system is not set up to let doctors spend an hour with a client, right? Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunate, because there's nothing they can do about it in that immediate moment, because that's, they have somebody else walking in the door, right?
System.
So it's not, yes, it's the system, it's not the people. But if we are really trying to support women, we cannot keep going down this road, because what's happening is younger and younger females, they're taking the brunt of it, right? It's up, you can't, like, when you're 12, first of all, you don't even know, right? But you can't, you're likely not to be the one to like change the system, right? Mm-hmm. And as an older generation who is now watching these like younger girls, that's where I get like, I'm like, I don't know, mama bear. I don't even know how to describe it. I get so angry because I know that they're not being protected, mm-hmm. right? I know that it is up to us to change the system so that they do better. It's not, and that's like, we're kind of in this thing where it's like, well, I had to go through that, so they should too. And we do that in this society a lot with lots of things, but that's like, that's such bogus. Like, if we are going to create a system that is actually healthy for women, we can't leave it to the younger generations. Like, we need to do it now. It is up to us. It's our responsibility so that they don't have to go through this BS, because it's only getting worse.
Well, and because when we start talking about things that younger women are facing, it is having that alienation from our bodies and our cycle, what our cycle can teach us, and looking at our menstrual cycle as a vital sign, as it should be. That, you know, a heavy or painful cycle, or, you know, fatigue or acne that comes up with it. All of these things are physiological symptoms of nutrition that needs to be met, of musculature and strength that needs to happen in the pelvic floor, or emotional attachment resistance to what is happening in our bodies.
Yeah, you know,
that emotional dysmorphia that comes around it.
Yeah.
And instead, our solution is to say, ah, you're bleeding too heavily. I get that's annoying. Here's a pill.
Yep.
And it doesn't dig into solving any of these problems that are still going to show up when you get off the pill to try and start a family, when you have any struggles with starting that family, when you have struggles maintaining that pregnancy, when you are scared to death birthing that child because you still have no association with your body. I mean, a lot of these medications remove bleeding entirely. So now there's no personal acquainting with yourself once a month. And it gets further and further and further and further away.
Yeah.
Creating larger and larger gaps to fill.
Right.
But an intervention.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's countless numbers of times that girls have come in, clients that I've seen that have told me about their struggles with starting a family, or just what birth control, even if they don't want to start a family, and just what birth control has done to the other systems in their body. But nobody has told them that there's another way. Like, nobody has told them that they have other options. It's like their other options up until this point have been like, let's try a different pill. Or maybe you need the arm implant or whatever it is instead, when it's like, what's really going on? Like, there's something there. There's something going on that needs to be addressed. And it's so sad, because women are just kind of walking around without, I don't want to like generalize, but a lot of women are walking around without any sense of self or any sense of what it means to know your body. We think that knowing ourselves is like, oh, well, I like this and I like that. You know, this makes me angry and this makes me that. And that's if we're even allowed to like show our anger to the people we're around, you know?
That's a whole nother layer to
But when it
comes to it, and we've spoken a lot about, you know, the history of medicine and where these things come from, a lot of this is based on the assumption that women should not have agency over their bodies, or are too dumb to understand agencies over our bodies. I mean, women were too dumb to be medical providers until mid-century, you know, mid-1900s. That's not that long ago.
Right.
And so this idea that we could have a conversation with a woman in all of our ditzy affect to say, this is what's going on with your body. These are your choices. The pill is one of them, but I need you to understand the risks and consequences, because that's not a conversation that happens either when we are provided with this out, because it would be too scary. It would hurt our compliance. We would ask too many questions that we just don't need to know the answers to. Or it doesn't really matter, because we don't know what we're feeling anyway. Because again, there's that conversation about women's hysteria over symptoms or stoicism over symptoms. We are not a reliable source of our needs anyhow. So here is a Band-Aid.
Yeah. You know, it's really, I'm really happy that you said that, actually, is that we're like too dumb to like know our body, because if you think about the advice you get from a lot of male medical professionals is now, and I, again, this is not generalizing all male medical professionals, and, you know, especially not all male doctors, but even if you listen to someone, right? Like, even if I come in and I sit down and I'm like, cool, I got to tell them what was going on for 5 minutes, but you don't offer me to make my own decision. You tell me, this is what I think you should take. This medicine will help with that. If you don't allow me, if you don't empower me to make the best decision for my body, because it is, if you don't tell me that it is my decision, right? That's not good medical care. That's not caring for the human in front of you.
And I would even go on to say that this becomes a product of our medical training. And
it's, yes, across for the board,
even in the alternative, like chiropractic, PT, we've both received alternative medical trainings, but they are still stemmed in a lot of allopathy, and they're still stemmed in a lot of that burn your way through the program so that you can have the authority to tell your patients what you should do. What they should do. And so this comes from medical training and alternative doctorates, where that is our job. We have more training and more intelligence, and I know more about anatomy and physiology than you do. So I'm going to tell you what to do, male or female. And while that may be true, I may have, you may have better medical training than the patient sitting in front of you. They will always know their body better than you.
And when are you told that? You know, like, when are you ever given that vote of confidence for yourself? You know, we're just not. We have this, like, we just have to believe the white coat, whether that white coat is a doctor, PT, chiro, whatever it is, right? We just have to believe the white coat, and we don't question, right? We run into a lot of problems when we don't question. And it, you know, the second that we stop questioning is the second that we lose, we start to continue to lose our sense of self. Because if we're not questioning every single thing that is being presented to us, we're going to fall victim to that. Like, I, that if I'm talking to you, that I know more about your body than you do, right? You have to question. Now, again, like the life-saving, either you do this or you're going to die, like, in this second, that's not what we're referring to here, right? But it's this sense of, like, how do we from the beginning have health? Because it's not the catch-up game that we continue to play. And it's not this false sense of, for women especially, it's not this false sense of, like, well, this is what society tells me I should do or be, or how I should act, or how I should present, or how I should talk about my symptoms, or how I should anything, right? It is ultimately you. But we're never told that. We're never given that reassurance.
And that's the difference between what traditional medicine, which is focused on pathology, focused on keeping you alive. And again, you know, neither Dr. Ashley or I are going to argue about the fact that emergency intervention needs to be just that. And there is a place and a value for that. But when we start to think about what keeps us healthy, what is on that salutogenic spectrum of choices that we make for ourselves as an individual so that we stay out of that emergency intervention for as long as possible? That is not the language that medicine has historically spoken. And especially for women and what it takes for women to stay out of that category, when we talk about the education where the white coat knows this is protocol and this is what we are meant to do, that protocol was often either experimented on with lack of science and organization, as we talk about Mr. Sims and even the Tuskegee study around syphilis. That was straight up experimentation on bodies seen as less valued. Or we get real strict, fantastic double-blind research on the bodies that we value, which were white male. So again, we don't have the research that actually says, and now we've learned this. I mean, take heart attacks, for example. The research about heart attacks, which is based entirely upon white men, left so many women dying from heart attacks because their issues are in the microvasculature, not the main arteries. It presents entirely differently, and you need to know your body and advocate for yourself, because what we say we know has its holes, has its flaws.
And, you know, I think that this is where, again, like I said in the beginning, it's like so hard for me to comprehend that people just don't know this. Maybe I'm not sure, because I just want to be like, everybody should just, it's kind of like that, like, blissful ignorance, right? Is like, everybody should just love themselves. But when I say that, I truly mean, like, themselves. Everybody should know themselves to the level that I hope that one day we get to, so that we don't have to have this conversation. You know what I mean? And I think that what's happened over time, as you know, we have progressed as a society in terms of like technology and intervention, we've just gone too far away from, we can have both, you know, we can have successful emergency medicine and life-saving and hopefully one day a cure for cancer, right? Like we can have all of that without losing the innate wisdom that our body was given.
And so much of having all that, and this comes to the duality conversation we started with, is that having all of that will inherently mean demand that we need to acknowledge both sides of health, pathogenesis and salutogenesis, that we will not be able to cure and eradicate any disease. I mean, right now, the United States spends trillions of dollars on healthcare every year, and all of our metrics and measurements are getting worse. Our death rates, chronic disease, and end-stage chronic disease are going up. All of this money being spent into the traditional machine of healthcare is not doing anything into pathology.
Right.
We have come so far away from looking at that mind, body, spirit and acknowledging what lifestyle medicine and knowing yourself and knowing when your stress level is going up or knowing what you need for care and rest and rejuvenation. We have gone so far from that. We won't be able to meet our collective goals as humanity, which is to survive a healthier, longer life, because we're not actually looking at health.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, to tie that back into, we started talking about energy in the beginning and then all of that in the middle. but when you look at, like when you look at the presence of masculine and feminine energy within yourself, it's exactly that. When it's in harmony, you're able to see the world with different eyes, right? Because if you're stuck on, like, let's say you're stuck on that masculine side, because all you have to do, it becomes like survival mode, right? And to retreat back and give yourself care, which self-care not meaning a massage, right? Like true self-care where you're like filling your spirit and you're filling yourself and you're finding your sense of self-worth and what is that actually, you know? When you retreat back to do that, we don't know how, right? So we continue to view this lens of like, I just have to do this to stay alive. Like, I just have to do this to keep going and keep going. And that feeds exactly what we were talking about, is our healthcare system is like survival, right? Like you're going to die or you're going to live, right? So if we have a balance, if we are, if we give people the chance to find the balance of this energetic presence within us, and this is male and female, we all need it. We wouldn't have to work so hard to find it, because we would know ourselves, you know, we would know what we need, and we would know how we work with our partner or with our mom or with our dad or with our child, right? We know, we would know, we would have such a more of a harmonious like system, just microsystem of us, the smaller family that we're involved with, the larger society, right? It has to start at you before any of those other things can be affected. But we, you know, hopefully, like I said, there's my like optimism that one day we're all going to be there.
Yeah, we need that body intelligence. We need the emotional intelligence, spiritual intelligence, all of these things that haven't been valued and taught for so long now. And actually, I completely agree with you. And in fact, this is what the desire for this podcast, with this movement, this Healing Ground was born from, is that on the one hand, I absolutely can't believe that we need to keep having this conversation, and that having it is so controversial.
Right.
The idea that we're talking about is going to be seen as fringe or hysteric or, you know, women getting unnecessarily loud about something, but we do, and we need to resource everyone with ways to get back in touch with that. And that's what all of the other episodes that came before this have been about, are what are ways that we can take care of our bodies, take care of our mind, take care of our soul, our families, our communities, all in this presence to what is healing and what is health outside of life or death.
Can I share like one little tip that people can do?
Yes, please.
Okay. So this is what I tell majority of my clients, especially new moms, but that's just who I see a lot of, but anybody basically who comes into my office. So, you know, you mentioned emotional intelligence, and we can't be emotionally healthy if we don't know our emotions. Mm-hmm. But when we're little, we're taught like you're mad, sad, angry, happy. I don't know. Maybe we throw in an anxious in there, and that's like sophisticated, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So we aren't taught emotions from the get-go, right? Mm-hmm. And then you either go one or two ways. Either you're a female, and if you show too much, then you're crazy. Or if you're a male and you show too much, then you're soft and you're not a man, right? Mm-hmm. So we what's that?
Either way, you're not allowed to feel.
Right. Yes, exactly. Very different reasons, but either way, no feelings. Mm-hmm. So we lose the emotional intelligence because we don't even know how to identify them in the first place, right? And then if you don't know how to identify an emotion, you don't know how to identify how that emotion responds in your body, right? You first have to know what emotions are, right? And know that they're real and they're a thing and you're supposed to feel them. So set a timer on your phone, or if you can pay attention, and every 2 hours throughout the day, ask yourself how you're doing. Ask yourself how you are feeling, right? Because you have to get to know yourself first before you can present this to anybody else, or before you can like support anybody else's emotions. Mm-hmm. So ask yourself how you're doing in that moment. And if you don't know the emotional word, if you Google emotions, you'll find pages of hundreds of emotional words. And that would be, if you wanted to dive deeper, pick one from the list and look up the meaning every day. And you'll be shocked at how many emotions are out there. But every couple of hours, you check in and you ask yourself how you're doing. If you don't know the word you're feeling, or if you find that you consistently are writing sad, like let's say every 2 hours you're writing sad. Well, are you really feeling sad, or is there something more descriptive to describe what you are? Or if it's anger, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then if you don't know what you're feeling, describe physically what's going on. Like ask yourself, are you feeling tension anywhere in your body, right? Are you able to take a deep breath? Have you been breathing? Or are you just like coming into your chest with just little like shallow breaths? Or sometimes you might be like, wow, I'm breathing really heavy, right? Like I have this like laborious breathing. Maybe it's that, or maybe it's just my shoulder hurts. Write it down. Like either, you know, scratch sheet of paper in your phone, whatever it is, write it down and see if you notice patterns in your life specifically. And then you can start to dive into like what's going on. So like every day at 10 o'clock, I'm feeling this. Well, every day at 10:15, I have a meeting with my boss. So there's something going on there, right? Or every night at 9 p.m., I'm feeling this. And that's when I put my baby down. So what is that? Is that fear? Is that like, you know, where is that coming from if it's happening every day? Mm-hmm. Or am I just not in touch with my emotions at all and I have no idea? Oftentimes, we just need to be held more as humans, you know, and that's what will fill us up and give us. And we can't get that from somebody else until we get it from ourselves. Yeah. So it's a way. And then you can ask yourself in that moment, what's one thing you can do for yourself? Like sometimes it might just be, I just need to take a drink of water. I need to like, I'm about to have this meeting with my boss. So I need to like go walk across the room and back or do a squat or something. Like I need to get movement, yeah. Right? Or maybe it's, I need a nap or a snack or whatever it is. But what is one thing in that moment that you can do for yourself and for no one else to support what you're feeling?
And this in its essence is truly self-care, because yes. You're caring for yourself. You're yes. caring to know what you're feeling, what you're mm-hmm. reacting, how external stimuli are impacting you and your physical body, your emotional mm-hmm. body, spiritual body. We can't do anything to control our outside world. We never will. It's a lovely thought that we all keep chasing after. But yeah. the one thing we try, especially in 2020. Oh my God. Yeah. But the one thing we have a fighting chance to take care of and embrace, and I don't want to say control on this hard edge of you will do what I say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah.
Simply be able to ride mm-hmm. is ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I love this exercise that you provided here with providing an opportunity for emotional intelligence. Can you name that mm-hmm. word? Physical intelligence. Can you feel it in your body? And then seeing that community impact. What are you doing within your world as these things keep showing up? Yeah. Simple routine, starting with awareness, is the way we will all start to work our way towards health.
Yeah. It's just, it's, you know, it's honestly just about starting a conversation with yourself.
Mm. I love that.
Yeah. And that's all, I mean, that's what it comes down to at the mm-hmm. end of the day is, are you talking, truly talking to yourself, you know?
And do you know yourself?
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That's such a hopeful place to be.
Yeah, isn't it great? Can we just stay there forever?
I know. We sit in this moment. Well, we do have to wrap up because people sit with us on the podcast forever. Dr. Ashley Zimmerman, where can people find you, your amazing work, your unique perspective on health, women, and the body?
So I am local to Denver, Colorado. So on my website, you can find, so the website is morethanknowing.com. You can find if you want to come see me in person, but I also offer virtual sessions. You can contact me. All my contact information is on there. So morethanknowing.com or on Instagram at AshleyDPT.
Wonderful. I highly recommend you follow Dr. Ashley. Her Instagram is always full of fantastic and inspirational, educational, no holds bar content. And again, just a fabulous person. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me back. So fun, always.
And until next time, everyone, be well, stay well. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard and got a little something out of it. Now remember, the information expressed in these interviews is for informational and not diagnostic or treatment purposes. However, I hope you find that having the right information and resources can go a long way to helping you on your healthcare journey. Ask the right questions and seek out professional help.